You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for June 17th, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live while we raid the stash of Barack Obama's fuck-it-all pills, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
And hey, I don't think we're the only ones who raided Dr. Obama's fuck-it-all pills. It seems like the entire Democratic Congress has done so. The Senate did a fabulous job with their very successful filibuster, which we'll get to in a little bit. And the House of Representatives took turns reading the statement from the Stanford rape victim on the floor of the House. So, you know, and as Chris Murphy said, none of this is heroic compared to what other people are dealing with this week.
Right.
Yeah. Fuck it all. It's time to say fuck it all and just stand up for what's right. And I'm glad to see in this election year that some people in the Democratic Party are doing that. And that's a good thing.
And high time. Because there are well out of our control, a well-established set of Beltway norms. And as long as everybody sticks to the fucking script, everybody moves incrementally forward and nothing really gets done.
And so when times like Orlando happen and are a major disruption and more than that and just devastating. But also a disruption to the narrative. That is an opportunity. And I don't mean that in a way. You and I have been talking all week about being kind of disgusted that everyone takes a tragedy like this and hangs their Christmas ornaments from it. Monday and Tuesday, for me, were really hard days. And I think for a lot of people, just it got to the point where just seeing Newt Gingrich's name on a tweet made me cry. Because it was just like, really?
Everybody broke out their script.
Yeah.
The reason it was different this time had something to do with Donald Trump.
Oh, because he congratulated himself?
Because it was so fucking craven.
Yeah.
It was, again, there's the problem with Donald Trump is not that he is who he is. The problem is that he is the naked id of the Republican Party.
Yep.
And the deal is you wear the fucking mask. You follow the script and then you get to be an atrocious, horrible, bent, depraved asshole in private. But if you want to make sure that mass murderers have guns, which Republicans want to make sure of that, they want to make sure any lunatic can have any weapon they want to kill as many people as they want because they have a script that says it's about mental health and Democrats politicize tragedy.
Well, and let's face it. This was an attack on gay people. The Republican Party tried to make it not about gay people. And Jeff Sessions said, no, you know, they were Latino. It wasn't about it. It wasn't a gay thing. And excuse me, but yes, it was. And that does not negate any other victim.
Right.
But this was an oasis for gay people. And this was an attack on them as gay people. And it was hate crime. It was a terrorist attack. It was a hate crime. Both. You were talking about when is the deadline? When is when is the statute of limitations to the point where we can talk about the politics of this? And that is the point that immediately the people on the right were politicizing it by making it not gay.
If I may quote Suzanne Munshauer from the Twitter, you know what they say about when life gives you lemons? Make a big public fuss about it and then blame it on Obama. They've been doing that for 7.5 years, and that's just normal to them. So it was just normal that they would jump into the middle of a tragedy and attack the president of the United States immediately and take credit for being right when people were still dying. That's just normal. If you call them out on it, well, that's politicizing. And they only recognize their own bigotry and idiocy when you punch back. And then they freak completely out because then you're politicizing it. But that's part of the script. That's part of the plan. That's part of the normal course of events. That is the thing that collapsed this week, that people kept trying to get back on script. Let's talk about mental health. Let's talk about terrorism. Let's talk about a bunch of other things. And the Democrats, you know, anybody in their right mind could say, this is a guy who can't get on a fucking plane in this country.
Yep.
But he can walk into a gun shop and buy a weapon of mass murder, no questions asked. Why is that not a problem for you? And you could just see them flailing around looking for some normalizing piece of the script that they always have to drag this conversation the hell away from the scary thought that there might be some gun control legislation passed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Donald Trump waddled in the middle of it and made it a million times worse.
And that's why I think it was so important that Chris Murphy did this filibuster, because he tied it together. He made it not just about Orlando, but he made it about everyone. He made it about the whole country.
Yep.
And particularly since he is in Connecticut, where Sandy Hook is. I mean, at some point, you can't say, well, you can't politicize Sandy Hook. It's too soon. Excuse me. In that case, there is no statute of limitations. No. You just don't want to talk about it. And so we're going to talk about it. And we're going to talk about it all night.
You're trying to politicize Fort Sumter, blue gal.
Yeah. Someone else said that. The burning of Atlanta.
Yeah, you're trying to politicize
too soon.
That.
Too soon. Yeah. So anyway, Monday and Tuesday were a hard day. And Monday, you pulled me away from my laptop.
I did. I threw myself across your laptop.
You did, which you do from time to time.
And I said,
no, you can't be here right now.
And let's talk about something
else. He's very good at that, people. I want you to know that I need him as much as he needs me.
Mm-hmm.
And you took me out to lunch to our favorite local diner.
One of our favorite. Let's not play favorites.
Okay. One of our favorite local diners.
Right.
And this is a diner that is a Springfield institution.
It is.
And politicians who wind up in Springfield, particularly Republican politicians, I think that's fair to say. Show up here. It is an Americana place.
It is an absolute diner.
Yep, yeah.
An absolute tin-walled
50s diner.
Formica tabletop, waitresses who've been there for 20 years.
50 diner. Years, yeah. And they're only open 6 in the morning until 2. So, you know, this is a lunch, breakfast, lunch, diner.
And Mitt Romney
was there,
right,
shaking hands a few years ago.
Yeah. When he was running for president.
Running for president.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And shook hands. And Governor Hedge Fund has been there more than once.
He has.
And shaken hands. Mm-hmm. And so, but we love it there. It's cheap to eat there.
Yep.
The waitress knows us. Good food and close to home.
And ordinary, everyday, working people.
Yeah, and locally owned.
Just as charming as you could imagine.
Yeah.
But a lot of people there in the T-shirts of the landscaping business or the paving business they own.
Exactly.
Taking a lunch break.
Right.
Or kids who are, future farmers of America are having a day out.
Day out.
Or moms with kids or couples who've done this for 50 years.
And then the mayor. And then the mayor shows up.
Yeah.
With his staff. And they all have an omelet, right?
Yeah.
So, but we were there and had lunch and you pulled me away so that I could get away.
Mm. Yep.
And the first thing we did as we sat down, as we want to do at this restaurant, we often have our podcast meetings at this restaurant and talked about, well, this was the day after Orlando. What do you want to talk about?
What do you not want to talk about?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And I said, gratitude. I'd like to talk about gratitude.
Yeah.
There are times when you really have to switch your focus from tragedy, and all of us had to face this tragedy together. I was very proud of Junior Dude.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful for Junior Dude. Junior Dude is with his two sisters. They are with their dad out in Western Washington, enjoying Puget Sound and having fun and in a small town and just goofing off for the summer.
Calling every 20 minutes.
Calling or texting every 20 minutes. They do that for the first week, and then they ease in, and it's like, no, I've got too much. My friends are here now. Yeah. And the thing is, too, school lets out a little later there, so the first week is none of my friends are available, and then all of a sudden, they're there every summer, so then all of a sudden, they're busy with their friends. But this week, like a lot of places, this small town had a vigil for the victims of the Orlando shooting. And Junior Dude, at the age of 17, went to the vigil. They read all of the names of the victims, and a minister from the town reminded everyone that we are called to love the perpetrator as well. And that is hard, but
it is called to do it.
We are called to do it. And he was very passionate about that. Mm-hmm. And what we are called to do as human beings, as children of God, and you know, this was his job. He doesn't speak for all of our listeners. I understand that, but he was speaking for himself, and he was speaking for his position in the community. And so they read the names of everyone, and there were a lot of tears. There were a lot of broken voices. They took turns reading names. A lot of people broke down as they were reading names, especially they read the ages of the people. And, you know, when you read 19, for some people, that's a huge issue to get through.
That's your kid.
Mm-hmm. Another woman, when she read 37, just lost it. But the humanity of that really came across. And then they went around and just sort of asked people what they were feeling. And Junior Dude had told me that he was going to do this, or that he did this, and it was going to be on the radio. And he spoke about discrimination and how all kinds of discrimination are wrong, and that it didn't matter whether it was gay or Muslim or Latino or women or whatever. What we're talking about is discrimination, and that discrimination must end. And it was very absolute in the passion of a very young person.
Mm-hmm. Certainty. There was a lot of certainty.
Certainty in his voice of discrimination is wrong. Yes, of course it is.
We must end this.
We must end this now. But from my perspective as his mom, I remember him being in the car seat, in the car, in the back seat of our car, with my ex-husband driving. He was 3.5. This would have been the spring of 2002. He was getting to be 3. And he was not supposed to talk. He was diagnosed with autism. And we were trying to get him to engage in conversation. His passion at that age was trucks and building and excavation equipment on the roads. Uh-huh. His therapist was working with him on adjectives, and he could label. He had lots of nouns. He could label all of the construction equipment alongside the road. And so we were dealing with details. And I mean, there's all kinds of things you do in speech therapy for autism to get people to notice details about things, to get people to label things, to get people to use the adjectives. What we were talking about, or what he was labeling, was construction equipment. And we saw a backhoe. And I said, "Look at that backhoe. It has a scoop." And Junior Dude said, "Yeah, like an excavator." And that was the first time we had a conversation mm-hmm. in his entire life.
And if you blinked, you would have missed it.
You would have. Well, and, you know, his father was not impressed.
Where's the Gettysburg Address?
Right. Exactly.
He can memorize it.
It's not
it won't
something
mean
I want to talk about.
Right.
And I said, "Well, you know, for the first 16 years of his life, we're going to be talking about what he wants to talk about. I think that's the point, right?"
Yep.
You know, there are all kinds of reasons I am now married to the person I am. That's all I'm going to say. Not speaking ill of anybody. But here is how far we've come.
But he was not supposed to be able to.
He was not. Well, he was. We did not know what was going to happen.
Right.
Did not know how his life was going to unfold. I did not know that he was going to be passionate about politics. I mean, I should have known, but I did not know that if he was going to absorb anything in this house, he'd be passionate about politics. I didn't know that he was going to want to go into politics. I didn't know that he was going to be so intense that he has essentially memorized a map of the world.
Down to not just countries.
Oh, no.
But a substantial level of political, economic, historical detail about pretty much every country in the world. And he's formed distinct opinions about whether they should exist or not.
That's why he's not going into the diplomatic corps.
Right.
Because he will just tell you that this country shouldn't exist.
Right. That's just wrong.
It's geographically wrong. The border's all artificial.
Yeah.
That's a made-up country.
Yeah.
So we're dwelling on this because gratitude. And because each of us has our own tragedies to deal with. People know by now that my sister is dying, right? There are things going on in all of our lives that are tragic. And we have to, and we're all facing our own death in some cosmic way or a very specific way, whatever you're dealing with. Some of us are dealing with that. I see it on Facebook every single day.
What?
We've had, what, 11 funerals in our church this year?
Yep.
Because we have a population in our church that is simply aging out.
I think it's important to interject here that my tragedies are much more important than other people's tragedies.
You mean the Bernie campaign is like a death to you inside?
It is.
You has died now.
My, well,
anyone taking that seriously, believe me, I'm laughing at Driftglass.
You know, if you've lived at all.
Yeah.
You've been through horrible things and you've had horrible things happen to you and you've had wonderful things happen to you.
Yep, exactly.
And it's if you continue to live on this planet, then that will go on.
Right.
And there's some things we can cope with culturally and politically and legislatively and so forth, and some things that are just coming our way.
And some things you just have to stand on the street at a vigil and hug each other and rage and cry. And make a statement.
Right.
And that's all right. But you and I sat in a restaurant of a locally owned restaurant and ate.
Bustling with a middle class, working class folks in the middle of a day who were all having a delicious meal and having a fun time.
And then a camera crew walked in.
Yeah. Well, there was that.
And this is kind of shifting the story. But here we are talking about what we're grateful for. And I did bring up that story of Junior Dude. You know, I'm grateful that he had given a speech at this thing. And, you know, I'm grateful it's going to be on the radio. And I heard it today and it was wonderful. So camera crew came in. And it turns out they were doing still photos, but it was a candidate for the State House.
Uh-huh.
And very attractive woman, I thought, very polished, as you might expect a politician to be, but young also. I thought, you know, she was probably 30, 32 or so at the most.
30s or early 40s.
Yeah. Early 40s, really. You thought she was that old? I didn't think she was that old.
I don't pay attention to other women, honey.
Thank you, honey.
You're welcome.
Good line. Polished, pulled together woman. She's going to sit at this diner table.
Uh-huh.
With either an actor or a supporter or a campaign manager, whatever she is, they're going to have coffee in front of them. They're going to have the sugars and creamers, and it's going to be a campaign picture.
Sure.
And the owner of this diner, I think, has lots of friends in town. I don't think he's, you know, whether he's politically connected or not, he has lots of friends in town. And Mitt Romney's been to his restaurant. So, you know,
He's
certainly amenable to someone doing this at his restaurant. It's good publicity for him. And this candidate wanted to do this. So if you're
listening in Chicago,
this
is like Manny's or Army and Lou's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody goes there.
That's right.
It's a real easy lunch restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's nothing fancy, but everybody goes there.
And the parking lot is dirt.
Yeah. Literally.
Literally. Yeah. It's a roadside diner. It really is. So she had gotten dressed and she was changed into a brighter shirt and they were talking to all her crew and they had cameras and the light. They had these big, huge lights to get the light right. And I said to you, I'd like to ask her a question. Well, she heard that and walked over to me. And so I just kindly asked her, and I didn't commit or get upset or anything. I just asked her what she thought of Rauner's turnaround agenda.
Yeah.
Which is what he calls it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
be clear, there's a little voice in the back of Blue Gal's head going, this is so fucking podcastable.
It sure is. We can write off this whole $16 lunch.
Yeah. Boom. Boom. That's your profit there, honey.
That's with drinks and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And tip.
Yeah.
That's with tip, people. So I said, what do you think of Rauner's turnaround agenda? And she I was careful not to show my hand And she was kind of careful not to show her hand either. I thought that was kind of interesting. But she did show her hand because the first words out of her mouth were not, "We cannot hijack the budget right. process." Disaster. Her first words out of her mouth were, "Well, I'm for some of it."
Yeah.
Well, you're not getting my vote. And she said, for instance, I'm for, what was the word, the reform that she was for? Ordering stuff for the government?
Oh, yeah, procurement.
Procurement reform.
Yeah. Yeah, which is on a par when it comes to the controversial portions
yes,
of it. It's like,
right.
I'm in favor of mime control. There are three mimes downtown that are making things pretty tough for everyone. I think they should be regulated.
I think they should have a police line around them. Yeah.
Yeah. We should buy shit more efficiently.
Yeah, that was the first thing was, I'm for some of it. For instance, I think we should be buying our office supplies on sale.
Right.
And then she went on to say, you know, I said, oh. She went on and said, yeah. And, you know, we can't just keep throwing money down the hole. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, government is a hole to throw money down, right?
A hole has a name and she's my kid's teacher.
Yeah,
so why don't
exactly.
you shut your pie hole?
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So she was not on the same wavelength as I was.
Yeah.
You had been paying the check while I was talking to her.
Yeah.
So we walked out together to the parking lot. We do have a 5-mile rule for meltdowns if I'm going to scream. So I just said, 5-mile rule. We walked out of the car, closed the door, and I told you about how important it was that we have procurement reform.
That's right. Went,
oh.
Yeah, well, and I'm like, you know, we're living in the capital.
Yeah.
The Republicans run the town.
They do.
And this is going to happen. But it's not going to happen like it happens in Alabama.
No, it's not.
Well, it's not Chicago. I mean, I lived in the most liberal district before moving down
you
here.
You really did have a culture shock. Yeah.
I knew what this place was like. I visited here many, many, many times on business. But in Illinois, it is Mark Kirk. It is Senator Mark Kirk. Who's going to lose? Just
yep.
so we're clear.
Yep.
Who is the first guy who says, I can't go along with Donald Trump?
Yeah. He's going to lose anyway.
Right.
I mean, he hopes that will help him.
Right. So this is a state where, for all of its long and rich history of corruption and people going to jail and mobsters and bankruptcy and all the attendant follies of Democratic politics, small d, politics in a democracy, is a really good bellwether of what a state would look like that is really purple, where the former governor, who doesn't have to risk anything anymore, says of the former Republican governor, says of the current Republican governor, come on, man, you're just being a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, why don't you start making deals instead of trying to, you know, suck up to the Koch brothers or whatever the hell it is you're doing?
Well, and you have been studying, and there was an article by someone who retweets you from time to time in the Atlantic magazine.
Yes.
About how towns can be successful economically, and one of the things they need to have is a brew pub.
Yep.
And who's the guy who flies around the airplane with his wife and.
Oh, James Fallows.
James Fallows, right.
Yep.
He wrote this article about what makes a small town.
Let's pause for a moment and note that I know what she's talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, see, right.
James Fallows is 20 other things, but
no,
that's...
No, it's not. We are on. We have shared brain cells.
Yeah.
We're not even going to talk about Hugh Hewitt.
No. Well, I only say Hugh Hewitt is a robot sent from the future to kill us all.
Okay.
That's all you
but
need
getting
to know.
Getting back to James Fallows and successful towns. Successful small towns need vibrant... local economy with young entrepreneurs working downtown, the way you attract those people is you have a brew pub.
Yeah.
Brew pub is like one of those core things,
yeah.
top 10 core things
yep.
that a downtown has to have to thrive, believe it or not. And then the other thing that really caught my eye about his list was a local political structure that does not adopt the rhetoric of the national politics.
Yeah. Yep.
So Republicans and Democrats, as you and I have mentioned many times, talk about sidewalks.
Yes.
They don't talk about, evil Republicans and liberals, you know, or Democrat Party or.
They might believe all.
They might believe it.
I'm pretty sure they do.
They might believe it and think it and go home and rage against
the
party. Oh, bummer. Right.
Yeah. But you know what? That's fine.
They leave that. They don't bring that to the diner with them.
No.
And I am able to shake hands with the Republican mayor and with this state rep candidate and nod and be pleasant.
Right.
And if she turns out to be state rep for my district, which I'm not sure she is running for my district, I didn't get into that with her because I know I'm not voting for her. So, you know, but if she turns out to be my state rep and I have a problem with state government in some way,
yep,
I will be able to go to her and get it fixed or know that she'll listen to me as one of her constituents. That is even more true in city government. Our alderman, who isn't around much anymore because he's now aldermen are part time and he's also what? Like
head of the Department of Tourism.
Tourism, which doesn't have a budget right now. Right. Illinois Department of Tourism. Boy, if I had problems with my sidewalk, our Republican alderman is somebody I could get on the phone.
Yeah.
And feel fine about that. I wouldn't feel like, oh God, I have to call this Republican. Ugh! Because he's gonna get the job done on the sidewalk or on the hydrant or on the right. garbage collection or whatever it is that needs to be done. And that's
he will explain to you.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, I go to these meetings.
Yeah.
I am very active in my community. Why we need to dig up the corner of this street and this street because the sewer that's 90 years old has collapsed.
Yep.
And that's why, and just in enormous granular detail.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's why this is important. Not only because of if you can just get people to keep their ideologies at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not bring them to every fucking
decision. To everything.
That they make.
Bring them to your podcast for sure.
Yeah. this is what happens when you can draw the poisons, the ideological poisons, and frankly, the conservative Republican poisons away from the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
What's left is the basic operating parameters of municipal government of whatever size municipality you live in, you know, a village or a city, a state, a country. And that's why controlling the limits of that conversation, what gets discussed and what doesn't get discussed is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Because you, at a local level, you get to talk about streets and plumbing and sidewalks and schools and stop signs. And can we get some volunteers to clean up this street over here? And by the way, we're having a ribbon cutting for some new businesses that are opening. And nobody says, well, you know, fuck it. We don't need sidewalks.
Yep. Right.
Sidewalks are, so, you know, pay for your own goddamn sidewalk. Sidewalks are for moochers. You know, there's no libertarian weirdness about sewers,
right,
about roads. Cause there can't be, cause we all actually use them. They're physically present in our lives. So, if you can control the whole idea behind, I suppose, this podcast and, you know, the work we do here, if I can expand it way outward, it's to get us as liberals to be smart enough to control the operating parameters, to control the Overton window of what is acceptable to talk about in our public discourse and what is not acceptable to talk about. It is no longer, at least for the moment, it is no longer acceptable to say nothing can be done about gun violence.
Yep, yep.
That is off the table. That wasn't off the table 6 months ago or a month ago.
Right.
But as of this evening, that is no longer an acceptable position to take in public if you want to keep your fucking job.
Right.
In most places. Some places that's fine, but most places that's simply not true.
Mm-hmm.
It is no longer acceptable to say, I support Donald Trump.
Yes, exactly.
Even though he's a racist.
Yeah, right.
That norm is falling apart.
Yep.
And so,
and we should get into that now. Just to talk about how there's two things I think we ought to talk about tonight. And, you know, we are well into our podcast by now. But
sure.
One is, as you mentioned earlier at dinner tonight,
Can I back up one more?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to do this. One more area of gratitude,
mm-hmm,
having to do with social norms and people coming together regardless of race, color, or creed.
Yeah.
The blood donors in Orlando.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who lined up around the block, God knows how many times, to the point where they weren't asking for blood anymore. They were asking for people to come with fruit and cookies.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. because they had plenty of blood. They didn't have enough snacks to give these people.
Well, and now this is an opportunity also to finally listen to the American Medical Association and stop the ban on gay blood donation.
Yeah. Yep.
And that, you know, the fact that gay men could not donate blood for this tragedy was
an insult.
Brought things into very sharp contrast, mm-hmm. into very context, sharp context. And so the American Medical Association had suggested that they stop this stupid ban years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been a lot of things that have kind of dovetailed together in a way. I'm not saying that this tragedy was necessary in any way or that it was part of God's plan. I don't believe that.
Nope.
I do think that some things happen in a weird way, and we should just acknowledge that it's weird. Mm-hmm. I think it was weird that Barack Obama got such a strident question about gun control on the 1st of June.
Yeah, a week before.
And gave the perfect answer for what this situation was ahead of time.
Yep.
And that people could point to that and say, he's been saying this, you know, that the no-fly list still allows people who are suspected by the FBI of terrorism to buy guns. And he brought that issue up, you know, literally 15 days before this tragedy occurred.
Yep.
I thought it was weird how so many people lined up for blood donation, and it became obvious how stupid it was that this ban on gay people giving blood, when the American Medical Association has said we really don't need to do this, in 2013.
Right.
You know, so
and just as a reminder, I mm-hmm. listened to Hal Sparks mm-hmm. over the weekend, mm-hmm. and he was pointing out that, you know, excuse me, every time there's a drunk driver hits somebody, mm-hmm. There's mayhem on the streets. What people remember is another asshole drunk driver hit somebody and killed somebody or hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's too easy to forget that 15 other people showed up to care for the victims.
Yep.
And try to comfort them and call the police and
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
rode with them to the hospital and, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. It's really, really important to remember that the good people
mm-hmm.
Don't spray ammunition in the air to call attention to themselves.
Right.
They are just in the background every day, mm-hmm. cooking your meals, wiping your parents, you know, your in their homes' asses, changing mm-hmm. their bedpans, feeding them when they can't feed themselves, teaching mm-hmm. our children, mm-hmm. lining up to give blood, and otherwise mm-hmm. being decent human beings.
And there are two points to make in relation to that. One is, Chris Murphy ended his filibuster talking about a teacher who embraced a child
yep.
rather than seek safety, gave that child his last moments in her embrace,
mm-hmm.
And how that's courage.
Yeah.
Going back a little bit in time, that was what you said just now is exactly what Mr. Rogers, the late Fred Rogers, said after 9/11.
Yes, he did.
He people were saying, how do I explain this to my kids? How do I make this okay? And, you know, that's very hard to do. How do I make this okay? And he said, tell your children to look for the helpers.
Right.
When they see the videos, look at the firemen helping, look at the policemen helping, look at the ambulance drivers helping. People are helping in this situation. Mm-hmm. And you can be a helper too. And you can, you know, and, you know, how can we help? What can we do? Can we send money? Can we send food? Can we give food locally? Can we make things better where we are? And so that's something that I try to do, that all of us try to do, I think, as liberals, is try to make the world a better place. That's why we're here. And
there's a name for beyond volunteerism when very, very large numbers of people get together,
mm-hmm.
try to figure out how to solve their common problems that they themselves can't solve. It's called self-government.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really pro self-government. Yeah. So that was what makes me a crazy liberal. Government can be terrible. It can do terrible things. It can make horrible mistakes. It can bomb people that it should never bomb. We can go to the war in the wrong places that we should never go to. It can be full of people who are corrupt and venal and terrible. Yeah, that's all true. But my kids are still being taught by decent human beings who are paid by the government. And my property is still being guarded by men and women who are basically decent, who are being paid by the government. I believe in self-government. I believe in making it work. I believe it can be made to work because most people are pretty decent. And I believe, therefore, as a corollary of that, to find the people who are trying to sabotage our project of self-government and drag them into the fucking light.
Yeah.
And make them pay for making their political philosophy, building an entire political philosophy around blowing up the dam of self-government, flooding us all, because somehow that serves somebody's interest way far away, who never has to live with the consequences of those disasters.
Yep. So the two things that I wanted to talk about tonight, one we brought up at dinner and the other you and I have talked about all week, basically. The choice for Republicans in terms of what they are going to protect about their brand, given that Trump is destroying so much of it.
Yeah.
And you had an analogy that you're going to talk about in a minute. The other thing I want to talk about then is fuck it all. The choice of Democrats to say, you guys are destroying yourselves. Here's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take those two things. Talk about your analogy of what happens when the hive is collapsing, which is
right.
That's the analogy you use. Talk about that a little
bit. I'm stealing directly from Gone Away World,
which you are reading right now.
Science fiction, by the way. Deal with it, people.
I'll link this at our Facebook page and we'll put a link up at our blogs as well. Gone Away World. It's a new science fiction book. It came out in the past 12 months. And I got it for you because I read a review and thought you'd like it, and you are liking it.
So far, it's really good. I am savoring
it. Really good.
I blew through The Martian in like 48 hours.
Yeah, you're taking this one page at a time, with a pair of tweezers, picking out analogies and words, and I want to use that word. Oh, I want to use. Yeah.
Well, and it's meandering. It's taking its time,
and it is that kind of writing. Yeah,
the writing is the writing supports lots of meandering. And one analogy they use is the beehive. There's some very hot summer in one flashback, and really hot for many, many days. The flat iron of summer has come down on the community. And there's a straight line of bees from the creek to the hive in the backyard of our protagonist's house. And it's because core hive temperature has to be maintained at a certain level or the queen dies.
Mm-hmm.
So the worker bees are completely occupied to the point of dying, of ferrying drops of water from the creek to the hive and to keep the queen cool and using their wings to keep the queen cool, and are willing to perish in huge numbers so that the queen survives. And the question that is talked about as a philosophical one is the queen an autocrat, or is this a miracle of evolution? Is this is she a tyrant, or is this an asset of the community that needs to be protected at any cost? It doesn't matter how many worker bees die, as long as this core asset is protected, because the future of the hive depends on it. And that got me thinking, because I'm weird and I do this, and I have a wife I chat with these things over. I chat over with these things over dinner, is what is at core, what is the Republican asset that they need to protect to save themselves as a party?
And part of this comes down to following the money and figuring that out.
Absolutely.
The other part of it, though, is the parts of the hive that have been left completely vulnerable because the Republican Party, in terms of the 16 people running against Donald Trump, lacked so much infrastructure. What I mean by that is the policy positions lacked infrastructure, lacked substance. I think one of the reasons Trump won so easily, apart from having all that free airtime and his celebrity and his ability to command a microphone, was that there were 16 people on the stage who stood for nothing. And Donald Trump, as I've said before, was the only person on that stage who was offering uneducated middle class white men telling them that they deserved an economic future.
I remember Charlie Pierce saying something like this months and months ago, that that for all of his insanity, Trump is the only person offering an essentially optimistic vision of the future.
For them. Yes.
Yeah.
For them. Right.
Everyone else, you know, we're doomed, et cetera.
Right.
And Trump's saying, we're going to be great. It's going to be awesome. If you follow
and
me,
why wouldn't you vote for that? If you're looking for someone to make your life better. And it turns out that I think Republicans want government to make their lives better. they may make noises about government spending, and maybe that's part of it, and debt, and you know, follow all of those sort of rigid lines of in their speech.
Right.
But they depend on Social Security. They depend on food stamps. They depend on disability, the mortgage interest tax deduction.
They do.
Unemployment insurance, and so forth. And they depend on their local governments for sidewalks and sewers. So, you know, it's not absolute at the local level. It's not absolute in the Republican Party. I also think Republicans really do hate Citizens United.
Well, that's the thing. They and this, if you go back to
base voters, I mean, you know,
exactly. Well, if you go back to Matt Taibbi's article,
mm-hmm.
Called, I think, Tea and Crackers,
mm-hmm.
about the Tea Party, right after that. Remember, there is no Tea Party. Repeat after me. There is no Tea Party. Joe Scarborough finally admitted there is no such thing as the Tea Party. It's something we made up. These are all my base voters. This is a marketing trick to get off the hook for being complete assholes and hypocrites during the Bush administration so they can get an early start on hating the black guy who's now in the White House. That's all it ever was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great big lie. So, but what do they all have in common? And Matt Taibbi, rather than doing what David Brooks does and sit behind his desk and muse about what possibly they could be like in some theoretical Whig-based universe where he lives, Matt Taibbi actually went to Kentucky and talked to these people. And they have no problem with government spending as long as it's spent on them.
Right, right.
So it's not us the government should help. It's them.
Yeah.
They hate it when the government spends a nickel on anybody other than them. That's mm-hmm. a waste. Those are moochers. Mm-hmm. Those are monsters. Mm-hmm. Those are terrorists. Those are a million other epithets. But they're perfectly okay with the government lavishing them with everything they could possibly want. You know, the public parks where they held the rallies and the scooters that they got through Medicare or Medicaid to get to the goddamn parks were all paid for by the government.
Yep.
And half the people he talked to worked for the goddamn government. They were tax auditors, retired tax auditors living on a small pension from the government. And so they have no trouble as long as the largesse comes to people who deserve it, which means them.
Yep.
And that's the problem, because to sustain that vision of the universe, you need a lot of enemies
mm-hmm.
to explain why your life sucks.
Yep.
And where all of that money is really going, because all that money should be going to them, and it's going to someplace else. And where is it going? Well, it's going to Mexicans and gays and liberals and Negroes and scary people overseas. And because the president is a king, obviously, he must want this to happen, which is why we know Barack Obama sides with terrorists and is secretly in league with ISIS to destroy America.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
why they believe this shit. But yeah, at core, they have no problem with big government, and they have no problem with someone promising them. The one thing I would take exception with is the reason the other 16 fell is, A, because they had lots of policies, which everybody hated.
Well, they had a policy of deregulating polluters, ending Obamacare, and tax cuts for billionaires.
You forgot defunding Planned Parenthood because they...
Oh, and defunding Planned Parenthood.
Chop up babies and sell them.
Yeah, right.
But the core was that they wanted to protect the party. They all wanted access to the party's assets.
Yep.
So what's the pot of gold inside the Republican Party that everyone wanted?
Big donors.
Well, no. They all had big donors.
Yeah. Yeah.
They wanted the bigots that Trump had.
Mm-hmm.
They were desperate not to say anything to offend the
Trump voter. The Trump voter. Vote.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Trump shirts.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the true asset of the Republican Party. And
so you can't walk over to Donald Trump and say, and you're right, and this actually is still going on today.
Absolutely.
For all of the screaming that Joe Scarborough is doing about Donald Trump, he does not dare say, and his voters are fucking racist.
Right.
He never says it. He and John Kasich had this long conversation, and Kasich said, you're not being upfront with me because all the free airtime you gave Donald Trump. But
yeah.
He won't say, and Donald Trump, his rhetoric is so terrible, and it's
right.
awful, and he's a shameful person. There's no way I can bring myself to vote for him with the way he's talking, without saying, and the Republican voters, the Republican primary voters, lapped it up like gravy in a bowl.
Right.
And no, they won't. Yeah.
And that's the wall they've already built.
Yep.
They've already built a wall around the Beltway infrastructure to keep people like us out.
Yep.
Not because we're going to come steal their office furniture or take their women or go to the cafeteria and shake up their Cokes and put them back in the fridge and ooh, ha, ha, they'll explode when they open them. No. We would do the very worst thing you can do, which is sit with them on camera and say, Joe, the real reason I think you're upset is that the people who elected you office are a bunch of bigots and assholes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you got elected. So basically, you're the representative of a bunch of fucking Klansmen. And, mm-hmm. and pretty much everyone in your party depends on the goodwill of really bad people.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way, and like junkies, you have to keep feeding them more and more junk to keep them on your side, in the tent, voting for you. So you have to keep upping the rhetoric. What Trump is doing is brilliant. He's taking your basic maintenance level heroin addict mm-hmm. and jamming giant needles with ketamine into their chest going, no, man, just triple the dosage. We're going to build a wall a million miles high and we're going to bomb everybody. We're going to surround the oil. And the gibberish coming out of his mouth makes no sense at all to any sane, normal person, but it makes perfect sense to Republican-based voters. And that's the scary part. This is where the two things the Republican Party and the base or the Beltway never want to come in contact with each other, which are an honest assessment of what's really going on in the Republican Party and the media.
Yep.
Because if we ever started talking about the fact that, you know what poll numbers are showing? It's really weird. They're showing that about 60% of the people in this country think Donald Trump is out of his fucking mind.
Yep.
And 30% love him. And those 30% are all Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that a third of this country, give or take, are that ignorant, that hateful, that racist, that completely fucking deluded? And they're all like, you know, 70 years old, 60 years old.
Yep.
How did they make it through their entire life? Who do you think these people voted for in the last election? And the election
before
that.
Have they
been
voting for 30 years?
And the election before that. As I forget who I told. Probably Rick Wilson on Twitter.
Who I'm following now on Twitter because he just had this rage thing against Donald Trump.
Right.
And guess what? If you want to talk about something where I have to hold it together.
Sure.
Twitter now says I need to follow Liz Mayer, Ben Shapiro, Eric Erickson, and Kurt Schlichter.
You brought this on yourself.
I know.
You brought this on yourself. So I mentioned because Rick Wilson was on his tear.
Yeah.
And the Trump shirts were lining up to scream at him about his disloyalty.
Right.
And my only comment was, look, Rick, a journey of 1,000 Trump shirts begins with a single Atwater.
Yeah.
Where were you when it counted?
Yep. Yeah.
Where were you, you know, little red hand, where were you when this could have been stopped? And the answer was you were loving it.
Yep.
You were reveling in it. Yep. You were soaking in it. You were making your mortgage off of exploiting bigoted, ignorant assholes because you never thought just like the.
Yeah.
Like,
and you're screaming about Trump, but you're not screaming about his voters because those are going to be your voters in 4 years and 8 years and 12 years and forever. Yeah.
Because just like the economic collapse, you were making a fortune off of the same scam that Donald Trump is now running.
Yeah.
And you don't want anyone to say, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Aren't you part of the problem? I know you want to suddenly jump outside the circle and pretend you're part of the solution, but it's really, you know who's part of the solution? You know who is the solution? The goddamn liberals are.
Yep.
The people who have been saying you're playing with fire and you're going to get burned for 20, 30 years. Those are, of course, the people who are never allowed to the conversation. Because they're the ones who will ask all of these suddenly pious 11th hour converts to calling out this horrible rhetoric.
Yeah.
Where the fuck were you when it mattered?
Yeah.
When the fire was small and containable, when this could have been put out, when this could have been stopped decades ago, you made a choice. You sold your soul and you cannot redeem it now because we know who you are. We know what you did in the dark.
Yeah.
And we know that God's going to get you for it.
Two things about what you just said.
Uh-huh.
One is the stuff about they're happy to have government funding as long as it goes to their people.
Yeah.
I don't think liberals need to be too cocky about that because we have found in Oregon that there's this wonderful blue state with wonderful social safety net for everybody, right? And voting is done by mail for everybody and universal voter registration, and it's all, you know, this nirvana of
Utopia, Blue Gal.
It's Rachel Maddow's utopia, right? Everybody gets to vote. When Oregon was founded as a state, they didn't allow black people to live there.
Uh-huh.
And once it sort of, that was its statehood in 1859. They finally passed a law in 1862 requiring all blacks to pay a $5 annual tax or be pressed into road work. Wow. The reason Oregon is such a nirvana today is in part because they are overwhelmingly white.
Yeah.
And they don't have to any lazy people to point to and say, those people are taking my tax money. It's all us.
It's all homogenous.
Homogenous. And we can say the same thing about these Scandinavian countries that provide, you know, universal minimum income and do all these universal healthcare, social safety nets, 6 months of parental, 2 years of parental leave, whatever they do.
As long as you're everyone's, not goddamn Scandinavian.
Yeah, well, yeah, as long as you're not Norwegian. As long as you're not a Norwegian in Sweden, you're okay, right? I mean, they do get into that. But these homogenous groups of people don't get into pointing at the other and saying, you know, you're the one. You're the one taking my stuff.
Right.
And we're not that kind of country, I mean, overall. But Oregon is overwhelmingly white.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to take a minute and just quick minute and talk about Pam Bondi, because I know I told you I wanted to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Because she is the perfect encapsulation of what you're talking about in terms of the disease being sort of inside the party and they have them having built a wall around what they are. And she got into it with Anderson Cooper this week. She is the Attorney General of Florida. And elected Attorney General of Florida, which is very important to point out, critical to the story. The people of Florida had on their election ballot in 2008. Remember, 2008 was when Barack Obama was running for president, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
So there was a gay marriage, actually one man, one woman marriage amendment to the Constitution of Florida on the ballot in 2008. Now, who put that there? We all know. And it passed. 60% of the voters of Florida said, yes, marriage should be between one man and one woman. And that right should be denied gay people. Marriage should be denied to gay people and anyone who isn't one man and one woman. And that should be enshrined in the Constitution of the state of Florida. And so Pam Bondi, when this issue came up over and over again and it was coming to the state courts and the federal courts and so forth and queens were getting shit done, as it was, someone said on Twitter. You know, that the gay movement was pushing for marriage equality in all 50 states. They were succeeding in some states. It needed to be national so that one state would recognize a marriage across state lines. And the state of Florida was being sued by gay people who wanted to get married. Mm-hmm. And Pam Bondi stood up for this is her position today and a year ago. I'm standing up for the Constitution of the state of Florida. 60% of the voters wanted this in the Constitution. The Constitution says this. As a officer of the law of Florida, I have to defend the Constitution of Florida. And it's not about my personal feelings. It's about defending the Constitution of the state of Florida.
She's okay. So principled.
Yeah. No, it's but of course, it's not about that. It's about the fact that you had an election in 2015 to be reelected attorney general. And you were not going to mess that up with whom? The Republican primary voters of your state who would kick you out on your ass.
They would.
If you turned on them and said, this is stupid. So you had to, you weren't playing the constitutional line. You were playing the Republican Party intramural wall around us. As you said many times on this podcast, Drift Glass, the disease is inside the castle. It's the mask of the Red Death. Mm-hmm. The disease is inside the castle. It's not about running against a Democrat. It's not about the Democratic Party. It's about whether I'm going to be primary.
Well, and one of the things that...
And one other thing. The only last thing I want to say about Pam Bondi is she could have avoided all of this by saying to Anderson Cooper, you know, Anderson, we're facing this horrible tragedy right now. Times change, and so have I.
Yeah, I was wrong.
And
yep.
And Anderson Cooper would have nodded and put his arm around her. We would have been done.
Yep.
But instead, she goes and whines to all her friends on radio. She has, it's all, you know, it's about her now. It's about him mistreating her. She goes on Fox, and Steve Doocy says she was, you know, mistreated by Anderson Cooper. And Anderson Cooper pulls out his show notes, pulls out the video, shows the her stupid claim that the video was edited. She was on live.
Uh-huh. It was,
How can you not know that you're being broadcast live and then go on a radio show and say, but he cut what I was saying out of the interview?
Well, and here's the thing. And this is why I want to say one more thing about Donald Trump, mm-hmm. the Trump effect. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. I will even give this up. I'll definitely give this up to George H.W. Bush and even George Bush at his very best moments. Mm-hmm. Certainly about Clinton and about Barack Obama in spades, so to speak. Mm-hmm. They get, when they're at their best, that it's not about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's about the people they serve.
Okay.
And sometimes the people they serve are terrible people. Mm-hmm. But the thing that kept the Clintons, I think, from just blowing up was a constant reminder that it's not about me, it's not about us, it's about the people we're here to serve, the people mm-hmm. we're here to help. We're called to public service. And Donald Trump doesn't have that gene in his makeup. Mm-hmm. He simply does not ever think of anyone other than Donald Trump. And now that he has become the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party, it is like watching from the outside, again, as liberals, we watch everything from the outside and we can see very clearly the entire panorama from the outside. It's like this weird EMP bomb has gone off. You know, electromagnetic pulse bomb that wipes out all electrical power, all circuits, et cetera.
Yep.
The Trump effect has wiped out linear time, memory, vocabulary, from lots of people in the Beltway who get paid to think and write and speak in whole sentences. And they have lost the ability to do that because at the end of every sentence, if they're honest, they would have to say the liberals are right all along. But they can't say that. Mm-hmm. So Team Trump this week, I don't know if you remember this, went to war about Donald Trump never said Mexican heritage. And I believe it was Fusion magazine, check me if I'm wrong, came up instantly with six occurrences where that is literally what he said. So it isn't a matter of spinning what he said in a way that makes it seem interesting. It's just flat out lying.
Flat out lying, yep.
Chris Cillizza, who finally grudgingly through clenched teeth had to say, all right, you know, and he made every excuse in the book and he made it as halting as possible. And he pled, but at the end of his column, he pledged to join David Brooks in the Mystery Machine and to go out and solve crimes and see what real America is like. Because, yeah, folks, I got it wrong.
Well, okay. And one more thing about Chris Cillizza, too, was the bullshit last paragraph of his column, which was, I'll get it right next time.
Yeah. No, you won't.
First of all, no, you won't.
No.
Second of all, how many people in the course of a regular job who got it that wrong and had to put in print that they got it that wrong would not be fired that day?
Everyone in the Beltway.
Everyone else.
Everyone in the Beltway operates under those. No one I know, other than people who are related by blood or sexual tryst to their employer, gets to get away with being that completely fucking wrong all the time about everything. But you go on a list of people, and you know, Tom Friedman, Bill Kristol, Chris Cillizza, David Brooks, Michael Gerson are wrong constantly.
Well, and then they go on Morning Joe and get their feet kissed for being so candid.
Look at you. You said you were wrong. You're so brave. Yeah. Here's a medal for you.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Gretchen Carlson for a minute? Because she fell into this trap this week.
Please do.
She just said that, you know, she has hunters in her family and believes in the Second Amendment. But nobody hunts with an AR-15, and you would never use an AR-15 to protect your home, and that she didn't see the purpose of a civilian having this gun. And she said, I expected people to call for me to be fired for saying that. I fully expected emails from people. And of course, after she said that, she said, and we took a flash poll. Do you think that these guns should be banned? 89% of you say no. And that's what makes America great. We can all have our own opinions.
You have your stupid opinion that's based on your paranoid jerk-off fantasies.
Racist paranoid jerk-off fantasies.
And I can have my opinion. And you know what? That's great as long as you don't vote.
Yeah.
That's fine. Keep it in your
pants. She didn't say that.
No, of course not.
But then, of course, she said, I was expecting to get angry emails calling for me to be fired by Fox News. But she got all kinds of F words.
Yeah.
And worse.
Worse. We're worse.
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 Yeah. You know, I'm sure there were death threats in her emails. I'm sure there was rape threats in her emails.
Oh, yeah.
We know these people.
Yeah.
We know who writes. This is the rung below 2013 YouTube commenter.
No, this is these are well, A, we should say that these are Breitbart commenters.
These are Breitbart commenters.
And B, we should say that Breitbart is the news source that Donald Trump cites
depends on. Yes.
When he talks about Barack Obama definitely being in the tank with ISIS.
Well, and this is where I thought that perhaps the news media would stand up and say, okay, you know what? There is something wrong here, and we can't take the view from nowhere about the Washington Post credentials. Okay?
They did.
This is about us. This is about journalism. This is about the First Amendment. This is about us being who we are and doing our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe at this point, just let time out for a minute. And or like Obama says, when does this stop? You know, at what point does this stop? Because this is now, we're now part of the story when the Washington Post gets their credentials yanked from them.
Yeah.
And the only people you're going to give credentials to are, as you said, what was it? Cat Fancy and Breitbart?
Cat Fancy, Grit, and Breitbart.
Grit and Breitbart.
And, you know, Cat Fancy's right on the bubble.
Right on the bubble.
Right on the bubble.
Ready to go any moment. They're going to be kicked out of here. So.
And Jeff Gannon is like, oh, man, this is my moment.
Yeah. I've got the photo ID to get into a Trump rally. You better believe it. So, and it's laminated. But they didn't. They didn't turn this into, hold on, time out. This has to stop.
No.
It's just part of the story. And that proves to me that cable news isn't about news and isn't about journalism and has never been about that.
Yeah.
There were only a very few people who said, you know, once you decide you're not going to release your tax returns and you're not going to apologize for taking a victory lap around 50 dead bodies, including the victim, including the perpetrator, excuse me, it's still a dead body that you're dancing around, congratulating yourself, which is just inhuman. And here you are taking away credentials from everybody.
But now you've gone too far.
Well, you've affected our ability to do our job.
Right.
And that you should care enough to give a shit about your job. That should something that actually you're so careerist anyway. If it touches your job, that should affect you. No, it's about ratings and advertising. If it affects our advertisers, then it's a big deal. Right. Yeah.
It affects. Well, there are several people, including Brother Charlie Pierce,
mm-hmm.
who said, oh, man, did you pick a fight with the wrong guy?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Let me include another little thing here. The Washington Post, the paper that has credentials lifted, mm-hmm. forgot how to write the word Republican.
Yeah, they did. They
wrote a whole editorial about how the Congress this and the Congress that. Mm-hmm. Congress won't pass gun control.
Yeah.
Congress won't take it up. And it was from the editorial board.
Yeah.
And the editorial board is Fred Hyatt, Jonathan Capehart, who I would ask personally, but Jonathan Capehart has blocked me on Twitter for some reason, so I can't ask him anything.
You're too strident.
I am very strident. But, you know, Marty Baron, who's the editor of the Washington Post, is not on the editorial board. They're two different branches of the same.
They don't talk to each other.
And so Charlie Pierce was talking about picking a fight with Marty Baron, who is this star, one of the many stars of Spotlight, who, man, he said, if you want to know what it's like to have this guy get his teeth into you, take it up with Cardinal Bernard Law.
Yep.
Because these are the people who brought down the Catholic Church, and God bless them, and that was a wonderful thing to do. But those aren't the people writing the editorial board remarks for the Washington Post, in which the Washington Post couldn't remember that there were two parties involved. It wasn't the Republican Party are in the pocket of the NRA and are blocking things. It was the Congress this and the Congress that, and so on and so forth. So it doesn't really surprise me that that lobe of the Washington Post, that part of the Washington Post, the cable news neocon shithole portion of the Washington Post, people look at that and say, you know what? They're just part of the entertainment industry.
Yeah, yeah.
And so fuck them. First they came for the liberals, but I was not a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And number 187, they finally came for the Washington Post. And at that point, nobody cared because you should have been defending us, all of us, from this kind of predation decades ago. And you weren't. You abandoned your post. You abandoned your job. And don't expect me to rise in defense of you because you don't give a shit about me. Mm-hmm. Can I read you a tweet I wrote in March?
Sure.
Fascist. Knock, knock. Media. Who's there? Fascist. Fascist. Media. Fascist who? My remark was Beltway pundits every goddamn day for the last 20 years.
Right.
They have spent so much time conspicuously ignoring the rising fascism in the Republican Party and profiting thereby. Mm-hmm. And so much time making sure that voices like ours are not heard, are not consulted, are not represented in any way. The alarm is never heard. The alarm is never sounded above the liberal blogger level. That when Trump finally came for you, all I could say was, fuck you.
Yep.
Fuck you and your entire industry. You know what? Where were you when we needed a free and fair press to defend us from George Bush? Yep. To defend us from Lee Atwater? To defend us from Dick Cheney?
Yep.
You abandoned your post, you motherfuckers. Don't expect me to shed a single goddamn tear for you now.
Yep.
You earned this. Now you
earned it. This. Yep.
You want my respect? You want me to stand with you? Then earn it.
Mm-hmm.
Start running stories on the front page of your newspaper that the Republican Party is rotten from crotch to crown with bigots.
Mm-hmm.
Run the goddamn story every day for the next 2 years, and then we'll talk about me rising to your defense.
Yep.
But you have a
role. Take a camera to the North Carolina that North Carolina Trump rally that guy tweeted this week, where everyone was drunk and screaming at Mexicans and throwing beer bottles and making racist statements that could not be repeated in print.
Make that your front page story.
Turn a camera on them say these are the people that I have been milking for votes for 30 years. Mm-hmm. Enough. They're not good Americans. They do not represent what our country's highest ideals are.
Well, that poll I mentioned seems like 2 hours ago now. But
it almost is.
The good news is that's 30-some% of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Not a majority.
Yeah.
Not even. These are the Bush regime's dead enders. These are the 27%ers. These are the people that hung on to Dick Cheney's coattails to the bitter end.
Yeah.
And they put on funny hats, pretended they'd never heard of Dick Cheney. They're not a majority, but they wield enormous political power because very big institutions that control public opinion, or at least shape public opinion, are beholden to them for their bread and butter.
Yep.
And so they have an outsized voice in our politics, but they are not the majority. And if we come out as one and stop them, they always lose.
Mm-hmm.
They will always lose.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for a lot of things, including my family and a bunch of other stuff. But I'm very grateful that there are still enough of us in this country that this shit is up to us. It's still up to us.
It's not and I want to talk about us for a minute now.
All right.
Because we're running out of time pretty fast.
Yep.
There have been many moments this week when I have been proud to be a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of the Senate holding this filibuster. I'm proud of the House, the Democrats in the House, reading the Stanford rape victim statement, taking turns to read it on the floor of the House of Representatives. I'm very proud of my president. I'm extremely proud that he's... number one, stood up to Donald Trump in a very firm way. He called out Republicans. That's what I liked about it the most. We said, Republican lawmakers, do you agree with this? Do you agree that we ought to ban all Muslims from coming to the United States? We don't have religious tests for to be an American. So I was proud of all of that. On the other hand, you and I started out the primary season as Bernie supporters.
We did. We were.
And have now moved on. Because there is a victor in the primary process, and Hillary Clinton won.
Won.
And we have said for months and months and months that probably since Bernie announced, I would think in May, that we were going to support the nominee of the Democratic Party.
Are we bitter? No. Are we disappointed? Yeah, mildly, but that happens every year.
That happens all the time.
And you know what? We'll get over it. But we're not going to take our lives or demand or sit in front of the polling place and demand... You know, Jill Stein or bust. No.
Well, no. And that's the point that I want to make.
Oh, okay.
Because you talked about Gretchen Carlson and some of these folks that once they take a step off the reservation and they're no longer pure, that they get the bricks just thrown at them
uh-huh.
for being traitors
right.
and threatened as being just total traitors. Well,
like that Ryan Paul Rhino.
Yeah, right.
Or Rhino Paul Ryan.
I'm seeing that all, and I know you say don't pay attention to some asshole on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking all over Twitter of Elizabeth Warren's a traitor.
Right.
And Oprah is a traitor.
Right.
And I even have seen, I am not making this up, serious tweets, very flat out serious, not ironic, not making a joke, saying if Bernie endorses Hillary Clinton, he's a traitor.
Well, let me just say, first of all, it's all the same person. It's four guys in a basement who are not happy with anything going on.
No, I don't want to get into personal insults about their personal lives. I don't care. You know, and I'm not a leader in this movement. I don't pretend to be. Our job, you and I feel, I think, is to try to give vocabulary to progressives to say, you know, here's how you talk to your neighbors. Here's how you make connections. And here's how you have hope. But this kind of rhetoric where even the candidate that you have supported for a year, over a year, if he pivots toward wanting the Democratic nominee to be president of the United States, that's a traitor to the movement.
Yes.
And that and I'm serious when I say this. They're not kidding.
Oh, I'm sure they're not kidding.
Yeah.
I just don't believe
Maybe it is the same four. Maybe it's four people. Maybe the turn your back on Elizabeth Warren. The photographs of that protest looked like there were 12 people there.
Yeah. You will end up with 12 people who agree with everything you say and being completely irrelevant to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So and there's a road back from that. And it's called, you know, having three more elections under your belt.
Yeah.
Going through this a few times. Believe what we say. Don't believe what we say. But whoever you are, count your blessings and find something to be grateful about this week and make sure it's outside yourself. Make sure it's something that you see in the world that makes you happy and proud to be a human being.
Mm-hmm. And then once you've restored your energy, use that energy to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is named Yoda. Now, this is a different Yoda than the Yoda we've had on before. We have had Bloggin' Freud as Yoda on a couple times. This is a different Yoda. This Yoda is a Polydactyl Bombay Wonder of a Companion and All Black Kitty. And I know about All Black Kitties who are wonders of a companion.
Yes,
I have one that sleeps at my feet and then gives me treatment in the morning by kneading the paws on the chest. And then will not let me go to the bathroom, the basement, or upstairs by myself. You are forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we know about black kitties and their schedule and responsibilities. It's a big burden. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Do visit us at our Facebook page and visit Yoda at our Facebook page and website. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. We got a brief letter this week from our friend Mike K., who is a regular commenter at your blog, Drift Glass. He is also the daddy of Bun Bun Stew. Remember Bun Bun Stew?
I do. I certainly do. We have a family of little Bun Bun Stews living outside.
Oh, three of them. Yeah. Mike wrote us and said, here is how I lost my C-SPAN virginity.
Yeah.
I never thought it would happen to me.
Yeah.
I never thought it would be like that, but boy, was I wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is the first time ever I thought I can just go to C-SPAN. I watch C-SPAN. I feel old. I listened to a little over an hour of the filibuster at work. I had to stop when Senator Baldwin started talking about the final moments of each victim.
Mm-hmm.
I was very glad to hear that people were commenting on how the Democrats filibustered for 8 hours and it's turned into a book. And it was turned into a book when Bernie Sanders filibustered about the economy.
He did. And we listened to that. We were on the road that day, and I believe we listened to it.
We did listen to it.
And admired it greatly.
Everybody turned to C-SPAN. I mean, there are moments when you're hungry for that and you turn to C-SPAN to find it. The Republicans filibuster, and it ends up being too disjointed to publish, and he reads Green Eggs and Ham. Yes, he does. Democrats filibuster again, and 11 hours into it, I hear a senator's voice crack, and I start to tear up.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if there isn't a both sides on intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really hoping some of what was said in the filibuster makes it onto your podcast. Well, I hope it did. I think I tried. As always, love and blessings to you and your family. May you and those around you be happy, peaceful, and well. Love, Mike K. And he says, Bun Bun Stew says hi. Bun Bun Stew's reaction to everything is to poop like a machine gun.
Poop like a machine gun.
Not the same thing.
No.
No, we don't need to filibuster that. We're fine. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. I've heard from a couple people this week who bought used books at with our Amazon link and wondered, if I spend a penny on a book, do you get any of that? And I said, I don't think so, but it probably counts towards our total items purchased, right. And that increases the percentage we get eventually. So
we don't see their algorithm. We just
no, and they won't tell us that, and that's all right. But after we sell so many items in a month, it goes up to 7.25% instead of 7% of your sales. So, you know, eventually we get up there every once in a while and make a little bit more. So feel free to use our Amazon link if you're buying something. Oh, and this person who wrote in, I loved what he called Amazon. He called it the Bookborg.
Yeah, it really is.
So feel free to use that for anything you want purchased from Amazon. Use that link, and we do get a percentage most of the time of your purchase, and that does help us pay our dental bills for the kids and other things. So thank you for doing that. We do believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are working on their pilot for Trump News Television called Pussy Galore and Rubio 2.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Drift Class, Blue Gal Podcast.